prayer for the election season, how to bring peace for yourself and the world around you during this fractious election cycle. That title above a post on the On Faith website would have been enough to get my attention, but seeing that the author was the Reverend Dr. Deborah Hafner added even more to my interest. Deborah and I have been friends for a long time. We've had so much yelling and screaming, and all it seems to have led to is more yelling and screaming. So maybe some prayer will lead to more prayer. Deborah, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
It's so good to be with you, Elton. Thank you for having me.
We'll link to your post in its entirety, but is there a brief excerpt that you'd be willing to share with our listeners just to start the conversation?
Yeah, and I got up the Monday after the Sunday debate, and I just wrote this to my congregation and then thought I would share it more broadly. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I will happily read the beginning of it. I woke up thinking, we are better than this. We have to be better than this, us. The next month is sure to be even more stressful, more anxiety-producing for many of us. We need to bring love to this troubled world. My theology teaches that love saves, that love trumps hate, that how we treat each other is how we bring the sacred to earth. Let us bring love during this difficult time.
Deborah, you have been listening to this campaign rhetoric probably for most of a year. Why now? Why did you write the public prayer now?
What I'm hearing from my congregants is a sense of fear, of anxiety, and what I keep thinking about is how that represents the entire electorate, that it's not just conservatives who are angry and fearful or not just liberals who are angry and fearful, but that I don't know that I have ever felt this degree of division and this degree of not understanding each other. And so I worry for us. And regardless of the outcome of the election, I think that we have so much healing to do as a country. As a progressive person of faith, I think we need to pay attention to how do we build bridges to people who seem so different from us, who seem to have such a different state of beliefs than we do. And yet, I know most of those are good people. You know, I mean, there are people who may not be good people, maybe coming from a cruel, ugly place, but I don't think that's 40% of America. So I think those of us who are faith leaders have a big job to do after November 8th, regardless what happens.
You know, I'm not sure that most people really are aware of the truly toxic environment at the current level of the conflict is creating. And here we are all swimming in it. I'd be interested in moving from the specific, your prayer, to the general, your theology and philosophy. How do you see prayer and meditation as an antidote to that?
There's that Christmas carol, "Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me." And so I think it really does begin on an individual basis. It's how do we go out into the world? How do we center ourselves? I speaking personally, but also as a pastor and watching other people, I know that when we are frantic, when we are not at peace, when we can't find that stillness and calmness and reaching for what is bigger within, we release that into the world. And so I'm from a Unitarian Universalist background, and some of my people pray, and some of them meditate, and some of them reflect. But I think in all cases, what people are trying to do is reach a place where they can have compassion for themselves and compassion for others. Whether prayer changes the external world, you know, that's a question that I don't know the answer to. But I know that it helps me, and I know that when I pray with people, it helps them.
What will it take for healing once this election is behind us?
I think the real answer is, and I'd love to know what you think, but, you know, I think the real answer is we don't know, but we've got to do better. We have to be better. We have to be more compassionate. We have to bring more loving. We have to work harder for justice. We have to do more to make those words liberty and justice for all that I learned when I was 7 years old a reality. And they're not a reality. And so, yes, that means speaking out against hate. But more than that, it means showing people what full inclusion looks like, what love looks like, what full equality for all of America and all of America's children looks like. Mm-hmm. And I think that those of us who are religious leaders have a role of being the prophets, of calling out what we are seeing and talking about, you know, what does Scripture teach us? What does the sacred texts of our individual traditions, what do they tell us that needs to happen? This is not the first time in the world that people have been badly divided. So how do we build those bridges? How do we get into conversation? How do we understand that people are hurting and that we need to find new ways of being, new ways of listening with each other? And, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy in our personal lives. It's not easy in our work lives. And so we need to do it one person, one moment, one cause, one community at a time. But together, I think we can bring about those changes.
Deborah, thinking especially about the important emphasis you've made on the gift of sexuality, the beauty of sexuality, the wonder of sexuality. And over these past 2 weeks, I thought of you more than once because I know that you're not only praying, but I know you're thinking about how women are being impacted by what they've heard. I'm just interested in hearing some of your thoughts and what they've been like in response to what's been filling the media.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is no question that women are being triggered, and I'm hearing that in social media. I'm hearing it here in my church. In fact, I did a session last night for women to talk about not the election, but how the news cycles have triggered them. And so for any woman, and I'm one of those women who have been affected by sexual assault, who have been sexually harassed in the workplace, who have been touched without permission, this clearly has brought up a lot of feelings. There are very few women in America who don't have a story, Welton. Who don't have a story of some man in power pushing them up against a wall and kissing them, or telling them if they didn't do something, they wouldn't get a promotion, or being fired, or 24% of women in America have been forced to have sex against their will. And so the sexual confusion, the difference between how some men, and I think it's only some men, think that power allows them access to women's bodies has been profoundly disturbing. And you know, talk about a prayer. I found great solace in Mrs. Obama's remarks. You know, I think she spoke for so many of us by saying it is not okay to talk about women and their bodies this way.
Mm-hmm. Anyone, a person of faith in this situation would be praying that out of all of this ugliness and hurt, that maybe we would be at a moment when openly we could have a conversation about what needs to change that we haven't had before.
I couldn't agree more. You know, just in the same way that the Clarence Thomas hearings brought real changes in the way workplaces understood sexual harassment, I am hoping that this time will engender a new national teachable moment. And, you know, I like that word, teachable moment, about how we use this, these opportunities so that people can talk about consent in a different way, so that men and women, I mean, and I'm hearing that. I mean, I'm sure you are, and I'm sure your listeners are, at church, at parties, at the gym. People are talking to each other about, wow, okay, no, men don't talk like that. Most men don't have those conversations. They may talk about, as Trevor Noah said so beautifully on The Daily Show, it's not saying people can't talk about sex or people even can't be, you know, raunchy about sex with each other in their sex talk. It's talking about that we can't abuse each other. We can't take advantage of each other's bodies. We can't touch people's body parts without their permission. When we talk to millennials, they haven't had some of the terrible experiences, many of them, that older women have. I mean, not to say that some of them haven't been abused and assaulted, but there is a growing difference. There is a greater respect. And as you know from my work, you know, I fully support that we need to be doing sexuality education at all ages. So frankly, I think every preacher should find a way to be holding those groups, to be talking about this from the pulpit, not the election directly. But one of the things people often will say to me, Welton, is, you know, how can you be both a minister and a sexologist? Like, how do those words even go together? And what I say is that fundamentally, both of my professions are grounded in the fact that how we treat each other is how we experience the sacred on earth.
The Reverend Dr. Deborah Hafner spent many years as a leader in the movement supporting human spirituality, engaging all facets of what that means, and in particular, human sexuality, as co-founder and president of the Religious Institute. After many years at the helm, she retired from that position earlier this year. In her pastoral ministry, Deborah leads the Unitarian Universalist Church in Reston, Virginia. Deborah, thank you so much for sharing your prayer and sharing your counsel today. It's always good to have you on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Welton. It's a pleasure.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, please share it with that person. Direct people to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. The community that's grown around State of Belief Radio is active all week long online. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and engage in the discussion. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, Welton.